time for some light conversation now about the future of the free world. Seriously, though, there's a lot of anxiety out there about a series of threats or perceived threats to the liberal democratic world order, the rise of populism, the return of trade protectionism, and the decline of old alliances, to name just a few. So where to go from here? The Economist magazine is tackling that question at a forum in New York tomorrow, and one of the speakers scheduled is former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon. That's raising a lot of eyebrows. It comes after the New Yorker invited and then disinvited Bannon to its annual festival this year after angry protests. Zanny Minton-Beddoes is the Economist's editor-in-chief.
So the festival we are having tomorrow, the conference we are having tomorrow, is the culmination of this debate and discussion we've been doing for the last 6 months on the future of liberalism. We've been doing it online and in videos and in podcasts. And in it, we have been talking to people who support our worldview, but also to critics. And tomorrow's event, I felt, was very important that we had somebody who epitomized a worldview that was utterly antithetical to ours, so that we could not just hear that view and challenge it, but have that as the backdrop, if you will, or the context of the discussions for the future of liberalism. Because otherwise, if you have really just like-minded people talking to each other in an echo chamber, then I think you miss out on part of the challenge that liberalism faces today.
What about the argument that by talking to Bannon, you're giving a platform to bigotry and intolerance?
Well, I will certainly call out Mr. Bannon on that, and that's clearly what very many people think. But the bigger point, I think, is that what he stands for is a view that is held by large numbers of people on both sides of the Atlantic. It is not an extreme fringe view. It is much more than that. The way forward is to have open debate where you can expose the weaknesses of the other side's argument.
You've written a long essay for The Economist's 175th birthday. Essentially, it's a clarion call to reinvent liberalism for the 21st century. Define for us what liberalism means.
Liberalism, I'm afraid, is now one of those words that means different things to different people and sort of creates unbelievably powerful reactions in different people. So to be clear, by liberalism, we do not mean the sort of leftist, big government progressivism that it means in the US. What we mean is the classic British liberalism that was behind the founding of The Economist in 1843. And its real tenets are a commitment to open markets, limited government, a universal commitment to individual dignity, and a faith in human progress that's brought about by debate and reform. But what it does stand very clearly against is nativist nationalism.
What's fueled this current drift away from liberalism?
I think there are several factors going on. Within the West, both sides of the Atlantic, I think there is a sense of disenchantment and anger at the state of the economy and at the fact that living standards for many people have stagnated. I think the aftermath of the financial crisis was a big part. There's also a sense that societies are changing very fast and a number of people feel that they are being left behind and left out. So there is a sense of frustration that ordinary people have. There is also a complacency that has set in, I think, amongst what is often derisively called the liberal elite, but the people who have been in charge because things have gone wrong. And it's worth remembering that over the past 200 or so years, liberalism has succeeded because it has serially reinvented itself. Liberals are at heart reformers. They want to improve the world. They believe that reform will improve the world. And the current challenge we face is that I think many people in the governing elite have become less liberal than conservative, if you will. We've lost the sense that there needs to be reform, the agitation for change. And what we're trying to do in this manifesto is to lay out why we think society does need to change and what we need to do to sustain the free markets and open societies that are so central to a liberal democracy.
I want to pose this to you. I mean, some might say that the remedy for right-wing populism is to push forward with a more radical agenda from the left, to fight more for social justice, for the redistribution of wealth. I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, I think the right way to counter both radicalism on the left and radicalism on the right is with radicalism from the center. And I agree with those who say on both the extreme left and the extreme right who are dissatisfied with the status quo and who think there needs to be change. Our 10 pages are about ideas for change. Where I differ from the extreme populist nationalist right is the goal. Their goal seems to be a build walls, close off, ethnically driven them versus us worldview, which I think history shows us is antithetical to prosperity. It leads to potentially violence. It's a very dangerous road to go down, because we just need to look at what happened in the 20th century. On the extreme left, I think there's a similar problem. I think history has shown us that sort of radically leftist ideas and a very big state also don't work. And so what we, the sort of strength of the traditional liberal agenda is that it's not revolutionary, it's evolutionary, but it is agitating for reform. And it's agitating reform that is incremental, but nonetheless quite substantial. And a large leap to the extreme left, I don't think will end up putting this country in a better place.
How does liberalism fight back? I mean, what's your prescription for saving the free world, if we want to be hyperbolic?
Let's first of all put some perspective here. We don't have a prescription for saving the free world. We have a few, we have some ideas, and we've put together in these 10 pages some ideas of what a reinvention of liberalism should look like. I think the first step for all of us to do is to acknowledge what the strengths are of the liberal position, what the strengths are of liberal democracies, and why they are worth saving and supporting and sustaining. Secondly, a fairly cool and hard-headed look at what's gone wrong. Where are the weaknesses? Where have we fallen short? What needs to be changed? And then thirdly, reasoned debate about what those changes are, whether it's education, whether it's rethinking taxation and the welfare state, whether it's thinking about, you know, how do you make markets more competitive? How do you attack vested interests? How do you make sure that you minimize, you know, concentrated power and crony capitalism? On an international level, and we haven't talked about that yet, but there's another challenge, which is for the past 75 years, the what's always called the liberal world order was set up by the United States in the aftermath of World War II and sustained by the hegemonic role of the US. Now we have two worrying trends. One is the rise of a very illiberal China, and secondly, an unwillingness, certainly by this current US administration, to play that role, and a view that it's not in the US interest to do it, and a more zero-sum view of the world. And I think we have to think hard about what a liberal world order looks like and how do liberal democracies sustain it. And that's in addition to the kind of domestic rethink. So it's a pretty big agenda. There's a lot to do, but the stakes are extraordinarily important. You know, we've had the longest period of peace, certainly in Europe, in the last 75 years, for many, many centuries. We've seen enormous prosperity around the globe from the spread of liberal democracy, the rules-based order, from free trade. And that's a lot to have at stake. And we, you know, it's our responsibility to make sure that that's not lost.
Zanny Minton-Beddoes is editor-in-chief of The Economist. Happy 175th birthday.
Thank you very much.